You're going to see in this story that Hinori's relationship with the Animus undergoes a series of transformations. In the beginning of the story, Maori, Hinori's brother, turns her first husband into a dog. And if you notice the description of how Maui does this, you'll see that there are images of transformation in a negative direction. Something is being progressively deformed and degraded here. As her brother, Maui represents the masculine of her own childhood. So he suggests her childish, that is, her unconscious way of relating to the masculine. To the extent that the Animus is unconscious, it expresses itself compulsively in the form of power and control. Such an Animus distorts the way a woman relates to her husband. She may be stuck in an infantile power drive. She may seek to dominate her husband, to turn him into a lapdog, just as Maui does. So there's no relationship, no dialogue, no inspiration, only a kind of impersonal companionship, and the erotic serves to gain power over the other rather than to relate to the other. A southern woman said it to me this way: "My mother always told me that you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar." Only she said it with a southern accent. So Hinori grieves her loss and sets out on a journey. The key is that she notices that there is a problem. She notices that her husband is a dog, and she longs for a more human relationship. This may happen, for example, when something goes badly wrong in a woman's marriage. For example, when her husband is having an affair. And seeing that something is wrong is the beginning of consciousness. So hardship may lead to consciousness, and without challenges, without hardship, we remain ignorant and undeveloped. At the inner level, we could say that the woman is dissatisfied with her current psychology. So she takes action. She renounces her current desires and purposes and opens herself to chance. She adopts a naive attitude, an attitude of openness to what the unconscious may bring, and she begins a spiritual journey. And this is reminiscent of Irish monks in early Christian times who would set out from one island or from the coastline of Ireland in coracles, throw themselves into the sea in a coracle, a small circular boat, and allow the sea to wash them wherever it would, and wherever they landed, then they would begin a new church. But what are modern examples of this journey, examples from our time? Well, after college, you may spend a year trying to discover what to do next, and you may have to cast yourself onto the sea of not knowing in order to make that discovery. Or later in life, you may try a radical career change. Or you may begin a romantic relationship, not knowing where it will lead, and accepting that the result might be destructive. And in the legend, there is the possibility of drowning, which means letting go of the old ego position, which may feel like suicide, and may in fact be mistaken for suicide. To let go of the old ego position leads to a depression which has a creative purpose. And in many legends, this is described as a night sea journey. And we could get stuck there in that depression. But Hinori has her enchanted belt and her incantation, and the incantation was used by people whose grief made them long for death. So she has cultural support for her journey. Her ancestors understood this journey and made provision for it. And knowledge, remember, is yang, so she is already beginning to integrate yang in a new way. And in our culture, something similar happens. We read books, or we go to workshops, or we study legends. If we are depressed, we seek knowledge from our culture as to how to journey through the depression. And Hinori is encrusted with barnacles and seaweed, which suggests a return to a vegetative state. In other words, a state when spontaneous life forces, primitive forces totally outside of the conscious ego, take over. This symbolizes that psychological development here is organic. It is not contrived. Jung said, "I don't make the grass grow." And what he meant by that is that the grass grows by itself. Our work is not to direct growth, but to provide the conditions that allow growth to happen. And this is another place where we can get stuck, just drifting unconsciously in a vegetative state and not landing anywhere. But Hinori is stranded and cast up like a whale on the beach. So she's been cast out of the unconscious, but her inert body lies on the sand, all passive of the earth, that is, all yin. So she needs to be enlivened by the brothers. Her body has to be scraped with knives, and knives are a symbol of yang, before the brothers can see its beauty. So you can see that a woman's development may get blocked unless she has a relationship to yang. So Hansen knows and Stupid knows rescue her, but she will not give them her real name, which means that her connection to them is not personal. She doesn't give her name, she's not seen as an individual person. And this interpretation is confirmed by repetition. The next image suggests the same thing. She has two lovers simultaneously, so again, it is not personal. She is relating at the level of the nose, which suggests the penis. And so here we have the first beginnings of a conscious relationship with yang. The story is making the point that the penis is at the same time both handsome and stupid, both attractive and lacking in depth. So she is absorbed in physical sex, and this is an adolescent stage. In maturity, sex also has a deeper meaning. And so this is another place where development might get stuck. We can get stuck at this adolescent point. She calls herself Stranded Nose, which is a strange detail. The name translates into penis lying inert on the earth. And this reinforces the interpretation that it is her own inner yang which is evolving here. And then she hears about Teeny Rao's pools where he gazes at himself. He reflects, so he becomes aware of himself. And this represents the beginning of psychological awareness. And we, of course, can get stuck here too. We can get stuck in admiring our own reflection in a mirror. So we're beginning to become aware of ourselves, but the awareness may not progress. It may get stuck in narcissism. And then we hear about Teeny Rao's dolphins. Now, dolphins are creatures of the unconscious, but unlike fish, they are mammals. They come up to breathe air and they playfully jump into the air. So they play between the unconscious and the conscious worlds. They bring something up from the unconscious into consciousness. And this is what a doll or a teddy bear does. It exists in the conscious world. We can touch it and see it. But it brings with it something of a mystery, something undefined from the imaginal underworld. And that is why it's fun to play with. And that's what play is. Play is an interaction between the unconscious and the conscious. And this is what symbols do. They bring into consciousness something mysterious from the underworld. So Teeny Rao's dolphin pets represent his capacity for symbolic thinking. And this is a repetition of the main idea with a variation in emphasis. The main idea is developing consciousness, that is, developing yang. Notice also Hinari's and Teeny Rao's beauty, which each is aware of. Now, beauty is intensely symbolic. For example, it's symbolic of love, harmony, and unity. So their beauty also suggests another way in which their psyches are functioning at the symbolic level. And again, this is repetition with variation. Hinari escapes from the womenfolk in Handsome Nose and Stupid Nose's village. She turns herself into a fish and swims underwater to Teeny Rao's island. And what is the contrast here? What point is being made by this image? Well, the contrast is with her previous passive sea voyage. Now her voyage through the sea is purposeful and ego-directed, so she has already evolved a more conscious relationship to her own phallic power. Polynesians traveled across the Pacific in ocean-going canoes, sometimes navigating purposefully, sometimes finding islands by chance. So they were sensitive to the difference, and they're making a point here in the story. And then Hinari masturbates with several different fish. And this is a recurrent image in Polynesian mythology, and therefore it is important to their consciousness. A fish is a creature of the ocean, so it symbolizes a lively force within the unconscious. It is phallic in shape, so it symbolizes the animus. So masturbation suggests not being in relationship with another person, but being in relationship with one's inner self, with one's inner animus. So again, individuation is the issue here. And we can amplify this image with the legend of Hina and the eel. Hina took an eel as her lover, and later she cut off its head with a sacred adze, and she buried its head beside her house, and the head grew into a palm tree. And much of the technology and the resources of her island culture were based upon that palm tree, upon the resources that could be taken from the palm tree. Now, technology is an expression of the head, of knowledge, of spirit, that is, of yang. So here again, a woman's consciousness, the consciousness of her village, begins with masturbation. And Western tradition has a similar image. All knowledge is derived from the meeting of Eve and the serpent. Masturbation is not spelled out, but it is implied by the image of naked Eve, the serpent, and the apple. Eve has to learn about her own sexuality before she can show Adam what to do. And there is a similar image in Egyptian creation myth, Atum, the sun god, who contains all the forces of nature and creates all the other gods. An ancient text says of him that by taking his phallus in his grip and ejaculating through it, Atum gave birth to the twin gods, Shu and Tefnut. And Shu and Tefnut were the origin of all the other gods. So masturbation symbolizes the development of consciousness. For Hanari, it symbolizes a step forward from bonding simply to the penis, which is both handsome and without thought. There's a parallel again to the main image of the movie The Whale Rider, which was set in New Zealand. And in that story, the sexual aspect is not overtly represented, but the girl riding the whale represents the girl's individual relationship to the animus, her ability to travel alone, to be the new leader of her tribe. So a young woman's individuation journey in this story too makes her a leader. Then Hanari goes to the reflecting pools, to the sacred house. So she reflects. She seeks to relate to the animus on spiritual ground. And this is a development, a progress upon her earlier instinctual relating to the animus. That is, she asks herself the question, like the question Percival had to ask the Holy Grail, what does this mean? But Percival had to relate to yin, the grail, whereas Hanari has to relate to yang. And then there's the image of the owls. And the owls stand in contrast to the fish, and in contrast to the barnacles and the seaweed, because the owls have prominent eyes, and eyes are the organs of relationship through consciousness. And I have another paper on my website about this, which you may want to refer to. And the owls have different interpretations about what's happening. They think about what is happening, and they debate it together. So this is another aspect of the evolving of consciousness, this discussion between the owls. And then there were the sexual metaphors about fishing and losing the hook and sinker. And a sinker, you should note, would be made of stone and would be phallic-shaped. And this seems to be a metaphorical discussion of Tini Rao's lack of prowess at fishing. A fish represents aspects of the self which have been plucked from the depths. And so fishing is the ability to obtain resources from the unconscious by using a conscious, skillful action. And in this sense, fishing represents the ability to think symbolically, to obtain resources from the unconscious by using a conscious, skillful action. And an example then of being able to fish would be being able to interpret dreams symbolically. And in the story, Tini Rao has lost his fishing tools in the belly of the unconscious. So he has been defeated and emasculated by his enraged and jealous wives, by the negative power of yin. And this suggests that there was no love, that is, no psychological relating between him and his wives. It was a matter of power. And thus the animus remained trapped within the unconscious, and it could not, in that state, support symbolic thinking. In Hanari and Tini Rao's conversation, the images all refer to the interplay between yin and yang. They play together with symbolic thought. There is a meeting of their minds. Thus their relationship has evolved to the level of a couple who flirt with words. And Tini Rao falls in love. Thus the regressive, destructive power of yin, the mother, has been diminished. because Tini Rao is now relating to the woman as a lover rather than in an impersonal way. Then Hanari and Tini Rao become lovers. The story implies that they do not merely fuse with each other unconsciously. Rather, they meet fully as two separate individuals. They meet both at the instinctual level and with a conscious awareness of each other. And evidence for this comes from earlier repeated images, for example, of them flirting and of Hanari's play in the reflecting pools, images in which they maintain the tension between instinctuality and consciousness. When Jung discussed the union between opposites, he used the alchemical image of the conjunctio. In a series of images, a king and queen meet in a fountain, get naked, and make love. As with Hanari and Tini Rao, a king and a queen each have independent authority. Jung argued that a true meeting of the opposites is the source of psychological renewal. In Hanari's story, her pregnancies and the birth of her two sons are symbols of psychological renewal. And the meeting of opposites here suggests that feminine consciousness is meeting the unconscious animus. And then there is the challenge of the jealous wives. When a woman prospers psychologically, she is going to be attacked by envy. Individuation produces the thing of highest value, and therefore it provokes regressive envy. And in our own mythology, there is the example of the birth of Christ, which provoked Herod's attack on all newborn children. And these attacks may come from within. For example, a woman finds sexual joy with her lover and then feels guilty because her own internalized envy of her own joy makes her feel guilty. Or they can come from without. But Hanari defends herself with her incantation. So again, her culture provides craft and wisdom, yang, which she uses consciously. And she also defends herself with the obsidian, the hard, sharp stone, which she had used as a knife to cut the umbilical cord. Now, in a decisive act of will, Hanari stands her ground and strikes again with a discriminating knife. So she enforces her independence from regressive yin by cutting the cord. And then Greenstone is released, which had been trapped in envy and rage. And Greenstone is a rare stone in Polynesian culture, and richly colored, hard, and shiny. For Maoris, it is the stone of highest value. Jung said that the stone of highest value was the goal of the alchemist's work, that is, the goal of the individuation journey, and so it seems to be here too. And Greenstone is yang, both because it made the most prestigious war clubs, and because, as an artistic product, it represents creativity itself. Symbolic images were immortalized in greenstone carvings, so greenstone represents symbolic life. So here you can see the psychological truth of this story. Carved, polished greenstone represents the climax of Maori's symbolic capacity, and the climax of Hanari's story is the release of the greenstone. And then Hanari becomes estranged from Tini Rao and returns home with her brother, which suggests that the tendency to regress to old family ties is still powerful, that these psychic achievements are not yet secure. And this ending of the story probably reflects the tenuous nature of consciousness in a Stone Age culture. To summarize then, this Polynesian legend shows that sometimes a woman finds her own power and creativity by undergoing a psychological journey in which she meets her own inner masculine. That's all for now. I hope you enjoyed it.